Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, Kalen Patterson, Midwest Muscle, P4P, Real Talk in the house. And this program is sponsored by P4P Muscles, because we got them. The number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the world. And ladies and gentlemen, if you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on, and a vehicle to drive your goals, like what, Desiree?
Like a Mack truck through ice cream. Not even going to try.
So gracious and cute, yes it is. Check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now, let's talk. How you doing, Des?
I am wonderful. How are you doing on this cool and snowy evening?
I am ready to rumble!
So, if you missed any of our promotional posts on social media today, you can tell that we are going to have a little bit different show that doesn't necessarily have to deal with bodybuilding, if you couldn't guess by Kalen's intro. But go ahead, guess. What kind of guest do you think we're having tonight? You don't know?
Me?
I don't know, Kalen. Why don't you help them out? Now I was asking them, but now I'm asking you to help them out.
Well, I'm ready to knock this one out of the park and hopefully have a couple of jabs and uppercuts and maybe a couple of chokeholds. See if we can get an answer.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Well, if that didn't clear things up for you, then I've got three letters that should. M, M, and A. Kalen, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest for us tonight?
Oh, Mr. Electric, this guy. The first time I heard about him, JB was talking about him. He's so happy. This guy is a natural athlete. Once you see him in the ring, you'll never believe he's natural. And I was just like, okay, I gotta meet him. And we had a great group up at the show. So I was like, okay, is this guy? He goes, no, he's even better than this guy. Is this guy? You know, and just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then finally, when he came down that walkway, it's like the whole room just changed, and it was so electric and so much energy. And you know, there's not many competitors that can bring the atmosphere into a room. Well, this is one of those fellas that can do it, and he's just one of those guys that's just—he's charismatic without even saying a word, just by his body expressions and everything he did. So I'll let him introduce himself, and I'm sure everybody's going to have a great time tonight because this guy knows the stuff in the ring as well as how to explain it outside of the ring.
How's it going, guys?
Jimmy,
oh, there we go.
That's your
nope.
Cue.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Well, my name is Jimmy Zedek. I'm a professional mixed martial artist out of Sheboygan, Wisconsin. I believe I was the first pound-for-pound sponsored athlete for MMA. So I've been sponsored by P4P for about 2 years now.
Yeah, you were the first one.
Very
and,
cool.
You know, they were really happy that, you know, with a fighter of your caliber, being a natural athlete, you know, because back in the day, there used to be where it was kind of like the WWE where you had testing but not real testing. So when JB had learned that you were an actual natural athlete, it was really shocking, especially with your stamina and your ring presence and everything else. And you definitely have to be a step above the competition, but also
yeah,
your cardio level and your way to sustain that for the rounds that you do takes a lot more. So can you just explain some of that before we get too far into the show?
Well, for MMA, you got to have fantastic cardio. If you're just in the weight room, your muscles need oxygen. And if you have a lot of muscles, you're going to need a lot of oxygen. So If you're just weightlifting, you're going to gas out quick. So what we do is we do a lot of rounds. Like, so I do a lot of bag work, five-minute rounds of jump rope. When I do my cardio, when I run, it's usually 3 miles a day to 5 miles a day, depending on what day it is.
Wow.
Yeah, that's just the conditioning part of it. When we actually do our training, I train about 2 to 3 times a day. So I do my conditioning, and then I'll go into my training. And then the training is actually where you get most of your conditioning. Just the rounds, usually we do about an hour to an hour and a half of training.
And that's every day, and that's on top of your cardio. So you're spending quite a bit of time prepping just to even step foot in the ring for, a match that might last. And here I'm going to talk like I actually know a lot about MMA. But from the few matches that I've watched, they for the most part, depending on the caliber of the athlete or the speed and their strength, they don't last very long. It's kind of like in the bodybuilding where you train and train and train for 20 minutes on stage at any given show. So for those of us who are like me and aren't as familiar with MMA as maybe others, can you just give us a little background about it and talk more about, just what it is like to be in the ring?
MMA is it's mixed martial arts, so you got to know everything. I started off in boxing when I was 17, and I just wanted I wanted something harder than boxing, so I kind of just jumped into MMA. Right now, I train boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, wrestling, and jiu-jitsu. So each day we have different classes for each thing. So that's why we train so much. So we do our conditioning, and then on Monday we'll do our stand-up. On Tuesday we'll do our jiu-jitsu, our wrestling. Wednesday we'll do kickboxing or Muay Thai. Depends on the day. So you got to know everything in MMA. So if you're just a boxer or a striker, that's what I started off with. And my first fight, I ended up fighting a wrestler, and I kind of got my butt whooped. I didn't know anything about wrestling, and I got thrown in the actual pay-per-view for my first amateur fight. So I got my butt whooped on national TV, and that kind of started everything off for me. After you get your butt whooped in front of all your friends and family, you either the training or you just quit. And
yeah.
I went back into training and... And I went on a 5-fight win streak after that, so it was a good thing for me, because otherwise I would have just stayed a boxer if I would have won. Losing to a wrestler definitely made me want to train everything.
Mm-hmm. And I'm more familiar with MMA than Dez, and thank God. And I have always had an issue, and I this is going a little bit off topic, but I just have to, because this is something, with the martial arts background. I never understood why it's you don't cover the elbows, because they hit a lot harder and a lot sharper than any punch. And is that a concern for the fighters as well, or is that something you guys just learn to look past?
We learn to look past it. We get to throw elbows too, so it's just one of those things where you have to learn how to defend it. Actually, in my last fight, I got cut under my right eye. It was actually my eyebrow that got cut. And it wasn't a big cut, but it was big enough to get, I think, 5 stitches or something like that. But in my last fight, I ended up getting cut again, and it actually opened up bigger. So the fight actually was stopped in between the second and third round due to the cut.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, fights can be ended just because of a cut, which
that really
sucks.
I bet. Because you spend all that time training, and then all of a sudden you're cut short because of an injury.
No pun intended.
I can see.
Yeah.
Stop it, Kaylin. Stop it. So I can see how that would be disappointing. But to kind of follow up on what Kaylin was asking, so elbows, powerful strike that you have in the ring, but what is your favorite strike or submission to use?
Me, I'm a striker, so I like to set up a knockout, and the best way to do it is to go for the body first. So I always aim for the liver. I'll get them moving their arms. If they cover their head, I'm going to go for the liver. And after you get hit in the liver, a lot of people have never experienced it, but it's horrible. It is a bad feeling, and it feels
it's
like
not something I would want to experience,
die.
I'm pretty sure. Oh, my God.
So my favorite technique is definitely a liver shot because it sets up the knockout. If you hit them in the liver, they'll either be knocked out from the liver shot or their arms will kind of crumble up, and they'll be protecting their liver, which opens up their head, which...
Yeah. Oh, they'll drop their
which
hands.
I like to... Yeah, they'll drop their hands, and that's when the knockout comes. So, yeah, my favorite technique is the liver shot. Actually, I've had six knockouts, five knockout of the nights, and I'd say four of them was due to a body shot first that set it up.
So how do you defend against that? I mean, that being your favorite strike to use, I mean, it's got to be someone else has to have that as a favorite too. So how do you set that up while at the same time trying to make sure the same thing doesn't happen to you?
So you kind of block with your elbow. There's so many techniques to block. But when you're throwing and they're throwing at the same time, you sometimes have to, it's like one of those risks that you're taking. If you throw a punch and they're doing it at the same time, you kind of got to hope that they don't hit you before you hit them.
Yeah, and there has to be some times where you just know that this fight's going to end quick just by the style the guy's using, because some styles just don't match up very well with certain competitors. And then there's sometimes where you just know ahead of time, this is a done deal. And, you know, how do you keep from getting too overexcited when you have that opportunity?
It's very hard. You train it. We actually train that, like, not to get overexcited after you land a good punch or something. But yeah, if you're in a fight and you know you're the better striker, obviously you know that guy's not going to want to stand up with you. So you got to kind of keep calm and make sure you don't make any mistakes. Actually, my last fight was a great example. I'm a striker and I fought a wrestler, and the whole training camp it was to not get too excited and not go for the big knockout. But I caught him with a jab, and I really wanted to get a knockout quick, and I kind of overextended and got taken down. And I kind of paid for that. So I was on the ground for the rest of the fight, and then I ended up getting cut, and then the fight stopped from that. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, so...
Oh, no.
Being too cocky
is
a bad
thing. Yeah, that's a bad spot to be.
Yeah.
Now, when you have that kind of... Oh, go ahead, Des.
I was just going to say, just to tag on to what he was saying about the training camps, I was wondering if you could just let us know about how much homework do you do on your opponent before you go into it. It sounds like a lot if you're setting up a whole, you know, your whole training just for that person in that fight.
Yeah, normally when you have a guy, you visualize that guy's face. You visualize everything about that guy. So the internet nowadays, you can learn anything from everybody. Like, I've had a lot of fights. I've had 33 fights now, and anybody can go online and look up my record or see my videos. There's so many videos online, so I can do the same with them. So I usually look at the last fight and a couple fights before that, depending on how long it's been. Because if it's been like 2 years, those videos usually don't matter, because, I mean, they're training every day too, so they're getting better. So we usually look at their last video and see everything that they do, what kind of style they are, how they block, how they take punches. Some people can take punches, some people can't. And we'll kind of do that in the training, like, to set them up. Like, if they're going to block this way, we already know what we're going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
But we do a lot of videotapes and a lot of our partners usually try to imitate our opponent. So if, say, my opponent was a southpaw, I'd be training with nothing but southpaws for that fight.
Mm-hmm.
But if my opponent switched, if he did both stances, we would have somebody that would switch too. So we gear the training camp towards the opponent.
Now, when you're out and doing all that you're doing, there's a question from Kyle, and Kyle would like to know, how do you manage your weight, and do you basically, like, cut a lot to get to that, or do you try to stay year-round at a certain weight and then come in just leaner?
I fought in 5 different weight classes, so with me, it all depends on what weight class I'm in. I used to be a 135-pounder, and when I was doing 135, I'd be walking around like 175, and then I would make the weight cut. I would diet, and then obviously the training, I would get down to about 152, and then I would cut the rest water weight for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
For 145, I usually want to stick around about 162.
Okay.
And then I cut the rest water weight. This last one was a catch weight at 150. So I just did it like it was kind of a 145 fight. So I was walking around like 160, 162. But, yeah, it depends on which weight I'm at. If I'm going a little heavier, I fought at 170 and 155 before too, and when I was doing that, I was about. And then I was not as in good shape as I am now. Like, I wasn't sponsored by Pound for Pound, and I wasn't getting the right supplements. I wasn't taking protein at the time, so I was kind of out of shape back then when I was fighting at 170. And I also fought at 185.
Yeah.
Too.
And that's an education in itself. I mean, let's be honest, you know, we could all talk about those horrible days when we thought we knew something, and then we realized, oh, my goodness, there's so much more. But the other thing I would like to ask, and this is about, the endurance aspect of it, is when you're fighting like that and you do have to take that much weight up, do you tie with the different weight classes, do you start your training sooner, or do you just run it at a different pace?
It also... it depends on when I get to fight. If I have a couple months notice, that's usually how I like to have it. I like to have an 8-week training camp. and that's when I'd start the dieting and everything. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes I fought on one day's notice before. I fought on a week's notice.
Wait, what?
Yeah, well, they'd call me up and be like, I fought almost all my fights were one, like the same week. They'd be like, hey, you want to fight this weekend? And then I'd be like, okay, what weight? And they'd be like, oh, 145. And then I would have to cut like 20 pounds that week just to make the weight cut.
Good.
A weight class.
Whoa.
One day, I had to cut 18 pounds in one day. I was in the sauna from 5 in the morning till 5 at night. It was
not a
good time, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
But
I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, that's why we try to train year-round just for stuff like that. In case, short notice fights do happen, you can take that.
So you actually just answered a question that I had, because I was wondering what dictated the weight class that you came in on, and it sounds like it's solely based on the opponent, you know, whoever they have lined up. Okay, cool, that's the weight class he's at. That's what I'm going to come in so I can take this fight.
My last fight was, my last fight was 2 weeks ago, but before that, it was a year. And then before that one, it was a year. So I've had a lot of fights cancel on me, which really hurts like the training. Because, I mean, you put a lot of time in those training camps, and then for the guy to cancel or back out or for something to happen, and you can't do that fight, and you got to go on to the next one. It kind of hurts you. So, I mean, for me, that happens a lot. So I try to fight in different weight classes just to be able to stay active.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and it makes sense.
I'm big,
especially
a firm believer in that if you don't fight, you kind of get ring rust.
Yeah.
So I like to stay active.
Have a question for you from Bob. And he wants to know if the Conor McGregor versus Mayweather fight will hurt MMA or help it.
I think it's going to help it. I'm actually looking forward to that fight. I hope it make it happen. Either way, it's a win-win for both MMA and boxing. A lot of people don't like Mayweather, but I started off in boxing, so I like him. He's very good at defending punches. If you watch him or watch anything about him, he makes people miss him. And a lot of people think that he's like running or dodging the whole fight. But if you actually watch in like slow motion, like for him to be able to do that to people is amazing. And I think it's gonna be fun to watch because Conor's quick. For that weight class, I think he's going to be a little bigger than Mayweather. So I think Mayweather's going to be a little faster. And I don't want to say who I think's going to win, but I think it'll do a lot for MMA because everybody's going to be watching. The boxers that don't like MMA, they're going to tune in just to see Mayweather beat Conor. And then everybody that loves MMA, they're going to tune in to see Conor go up against one of the best boxers in the world. So it's going to be good for both boxing and MMA. And it's a win-win for, I think, both of them. Unless Mayweather loses, then that's going to be bad for his legacy.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up about Mayweather because, like, it's called a sweet science for a reason, being boxing. And when you have somebody completely miss, that takes talent. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to give that because it's not much action in watching somebody miss. But for the person that has to go through it round after round, drill after drill, and even in the later rounds still have somebody completely missing, that's quite a feat in itself. And I can see why he's so hated because – you know, boxers don't like to look bad. And when you can't even touch the guy, you know, that's frustrating. And, of course, there's going to be people that say it's not real boxing. But, you know, there's some, you know, at his class, you know, like heavyweights were considered the knockout people. And then you have his people in his class were basically the artists. So he's not being out of character when he's doing what he's doing at the weight and size he's fighting.
Yeah, what he does is amazing to me. I study him a lot. I'm a striker, so obviously I want to be good in boxing and in kickboxing and in Muay Thai. So he's one of my idols. I like his style of making people miss and then making them pay for it.
Now, there's one, and I don't know if you had a chance to see the Ronda fight, but Sam just wants to know, did her, it's, you know, since you're a boxer, how would you rate her boxing technique? Okay, technique.
Her boxing technique was not good. she's a judo. I think she was a gold medal in judo. So I mean that's
mm-hmm.
her thing. And
she's very good.
She
at
used
that.
Her. Yeah, and in the beginning she was fighting a lot of wrestlers and a lot of people that weren't as good. Of strikers, so she could use her striking, and then right when she would tag them, they would turn into wrestlers, which wrestlers come in judo you use people's weight as your advantage, so you their weight against them. Yeah, so wrestlers come in, and she would just hip toss them right in an armbar every single time, or she would fight somebody that she was better at striking than. But now that all these women that have been doing it forever, they were under contracts before with other organizations, so they couldn't get in the UFC at first. So that's why UFC had a lot of like beginners for like the women's division. And now that all these women that have been doing mixed martial arts forever, now that their contracts are up and they're getting signed with the UFC, now you're seeing all these females that were in there that were at the top getting kind of beat, almost making it look like it was easy. But
yeah.
That's because these other women, they train everything. They train striking, they train jiu-jitsu, they train wrestling. And with Ronda, her boxing was not at a high level. So with like her last fight, she tried to strike with her, and then when she couldn't, she tried. Amanda Nunes is not she's not a wrestler. She's a striker, so she wasn't going to come in and wrestle with her. And Ronda tried, like, grabbing her, like, trying to clinch up with her, which was horrible against a striker.
Oh, it was awful.
And, and when she got rocked standing, she didn't know what to do. She couldn't get a hold of her. Amanda wasn't wrestling her, so she wasn't coming in. And when she started doing footwork while she was getting rocked, that's when I knew the ref should have stopped it, because Ronda didn't know what was going on at that point. She took a lot of hard hits, and especially hard hits while she wasn't defending herself. So I'm glad
that's
the ref stopped that fight.
Because, you know, but honestly, and, you know, this is just MMA speak, right, I'm talking right now. I don't think anybody's prepared for what the Brazilians are bringing. And what, you know, that hunger they have, it's like, you know, when you were on that winning streak, you had a hunger that I didn't think anybody was ready for when you got in the ring, and I don't think anybody is ready for what they're bringing right now, because they are hungry. It's not like they want to win. They want it all. Like you said, they've been in the background for a lot of years, so I don't think anybody's really ready for what, no matter what weight class you're talking about, if they're coming out of that style and from that camp, I really feel for anybody that's stepping in the ring with them.
Yeah. I mean, they've been training their whole lives for this, and they train everything, and that's what people are going to start seeing coming up is the younger guys, too. Since MMA came out, a lot of people have been putting their kids into it just for, like, self-defense classes, and these young people have been training everything since they've been kids. So a lot of these younger guys that are coming up, they're going to be – a lot of people are going to be surprised. Actually, a fight that just happened was a perfect example. It was Cody against Dominic Cruz. Cody, 24. I mean, that guy's been wrestling his whole life. He's been boxing his whole life. He actually made Dominic Cruz look bad. He actually, just like Mayweather, he made Dominic Cruz come at him, and he made him miss him, and then he made him pay for it every time he missed. I don't know if you saw that fight at all.
Yes, yes. But see, that's what I'm saying. It's not like a close fight, even though on paper it looked like it should be. It's so one-sided that it's frightening. And you know, I think that's scaring a lot of the established fighters because, like I said, like what you know and what I know is that they've been hungry for a long time. This is not a surprise for anybody that's been watching the other different divisions and organizations. But for the people that have been watching the UFC only, they're like, you know, what the heck is going on? But I'm saying this has been something that's been brewing for a long time.
Yep. Yeah, they're...
I was just going to say, so how does the established athlete stay ahead of that curve then?
You
who maybe
have
hasn't
train.
Been
train
training as long. Mm.
Yeah, you just got to keep training everything. Like, I've been training, obviously I'm a striker, so I've been training wrestling for a very long time, but there's still a lot of stuff I needed to do with wrestling that I'm working on now. Actually, that's why I'm out in Denver, too. They have one of the best wrestling coaches out here, so I'm out here getting a lot of wrestling in.
Well, it makes a difference. The more all-around fighter you are, the better chances you have of actually making it to the end of the fight. Because, you know, it used to be, you know, with the Chuck Liddells and you know, the tall guys coming in, the Silvas, and you had basically a style that you just had to match up to, and, you know, however best you matched up is what you went for. But now, like you said, there's so many all-around fighters that game doesn't play anymore.
Yep. Yeah, if you're just a striker, you're going to get beat. If you're fighting a guy who knows wrestling and jiu-jitsu, you're going to get beat. I know everybody said I said it forever, too, that every fight starts standing, but these guys know stand up, too, now. So you gotta know their game, because it's like there's a saying that, like, especially for Brazilian jiu-jitsu, if you don't do it, if you do BJJ, you're like a shark. And if somebody doesn't know how to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu and they jump in the water with you, it's not going to be a good day for them.
So based on what you just said then, I'm assuming that you probably prefer to stand with your opponents or take them to the ground versus taking them to the ground, or that's kind of shifting for you and you're just ready for either, or do you have a preference?
I like to stand up. But if they want to try to take me down, I'm going to try my hardest to keep it up. And if they do take me down, I'm going to try my hardest to get back up. I can do everything. I've been doing it jiu-jitsu for forever. I've had my blue belt for 5 years now. It's just the fans want to see a knockout. And it's something I've been training for my whole life, so It's something I want to. So I just like that. I like exciting fights, and striking is exciting for me. To be able to set up something that you want to, it happens. It's just an awesome feeling. So yeah, I love to keep it standing.
Okay, cool. And you are a pro, if I have that correct. So
yeah.
What is that process like? How do you become pro in MMA?
Well, now that before, like, Wisconsin didn't have a commission, now they do. So I believe you have to have so many amateur fights, and you have to be out of a gym, like a true gym, before you can turn professional. And you have to have a winning record too as an amateur. So now you can't just get right into it. You gotta go through the amateurs, and then apply for your pro license. And you could get denied.
Okay.
There's a lot of things that go into that, but yeah, I had a 9 amateur fights, and then I went pro, and then I've had. Like what we were talking about before with the rounds. As amateurs, you have 3 2-minute rounds, and as pros, you have 3 5-minute rounds. And for title fights, it's 5 5-minute rounds. There's a little difference between the amateurs and the pros.
Okay, I got one from another Sam, and he wants to know about dirty fighting and how you handle that in the ring without losing your cool and losing a fight.
Sometimes there are guys that fight dirty. You just gotta almost ignore it. You just have to stick with your game plan, no matter what.
So what's considered like a dirty move, I guess, or dirty fighting?
Some people will grab the inside of your gloves. Some people will poke you in the eyes. Some people will...
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah. Some people will... they'll kick you in the groin.
Yes.
You get... In MMA, you get 5 minutes of rest if you get kicked in the groin. So a lot of fighters, if they're tired, they'll just do it just because they know that you'll take a break to recover. So that's pretty much the biggest thing, is that a lot of people will potentially kick you in the groin.
Man, well, I guess if you need a little break, there you have it.
Oh, my goodness. Gotta love field talk.
shoot.
Yeah, there's a lot of other things
too.
Like, there's moves that you don't use that's illegal, just because it could end somebody's career. Like, there's a, it's illegal to kick somebody in the, I wouldn't say kick, but push kick somebody in the knee so it would hyperextend. Like, that is legal. You can't do it. But that's something, like, that you just don't do. Some fighters will do it. I've done it to somebody, and it was only because they did it to me first. And right after they did it, it was kind of like, okay, that's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
So, but that's one of those things that it's legal. You can do it, but you just don't do it.
Yeah.
Unless... You have to.
Yeah, respect for the sport. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like, they're professionals too. So, I mean, if they can't go do their job, and like, you don't want to ruin their life.
Yeah.
So you kind of don't want to do that.
No, I mean, and it, you know, it's just that, I guess, that courtesy. But that only lasts as long as, you know, the drive to win doesn't overshadow, you know, the need to use tactics if you're not winning in a particular fight. So hopefully, you know, you never have anything major like that happen to you. We have a question
actually,
for Carl.
Something.
Oh.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to go on, off that. This happened like a week ago. I think it was a week or two weeks ago. One guy, he came out. It was actually the fastest knockout in the history now. He came out to touch the guy's glove, and he actually put his hand out to touch the guy's glove, and then he came over the top and knocked the guy out before they hit gloves. So he actually used that against them because in the rules, right when the bell rings, like, it doesn't matter. So, like, he went out to touch the guy's glove, and he made the guy put his hand out too, and then he went and knocked him out at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah,
I mean, like, that kind of stuff is horrible. But the guy has the fastest knockout in
Yeah,
in
what
MMA
a way to
now.
Earn it, though. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah,
you don't
horrible.
Get respect on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, but guys will do that. I've had that done to me a couple times, actually. So now
really?
I don't, if... Yeah, so now I don't put my arm out at all, and I let them know before the fight. I'm like, it's not going to happen. But if I know the guy, I will do it, just because I know the guy, and I know he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's an opponent that I don't
That's
know personally,
low,
it, yeah, it's
no.
not going to happen.
See, now you got us all upset. We got a P4C brother
yeah.
out here, people trying to take advantage of him. We're not happy about that. It's good you don't fall for it anymore. Oh, man, I would just be ticked off. I mean, I guess after you come to, it's a little late for that, but it's just like,
yeah.
And it's funny because, like some guys get knocked out, or women, they don't realize the fight is over, and people think, oh, you know, they're so mad and they're so aggressive. It's like, how can you stop the fight when it hadn't even started? Because I don't think, for anybody that's never been knocked out, you don't really understand just how disoriented you are, even after it looks like everything's come back, it's not. So it's what looks like anger to anybody is just common knowledge to boxers and fighters. So, you know,
I've never been knocked out, but I've been hit on the temple, and that, like, makes your, like, vision go for a little bit. And then it comes back to you, and like during practice, you train for that. Like if that happens, like you still throw combos because that will make your opponent back off because they don't know that they hurt you at all. But yeah, so like when people get knocked out, and they wake back up, they still think that they're in the fight, and they'll sometimes go after the ref. Yeah, they usually don't know what happened at all.
It's a bad spot. It's a bad spot. Go ahead, Dad.
Man, okay. Carl, we're getting to your question, brother. Carl wants to know if you will ever get a shot in the UFC.
That is the plan. I changed my training camp. I'm out here in Denver training with everybody here is in the UFC. I'm training with some of the best coaches in the world. I put my time in, and now it's just keep training and keep doing what I'm doing. I feel like the time will come when I do get the call, and I feel like I'm in the right place right now to be able to do it. There's a lot of stuff I still want to work on before I get in the UFC, so it's just like getting better at my ground game and some other stuff, but yeah, that's the goal, and that's always been the goal to get in the UFC.
Now, I have a question to piggyback that, and this is not from listening, this is something I was thinking about, because you know a lot of these smaller organizations have better fighters. I'm not saying that to be a slam against the UFC, but they don't know who's going to be the best that night. They're just putting on good shows. So do you think at any time the UFC will start to adopt that format instead of trying to go with their projected stars, or are they just going to keep going with the people they think the audiences are going to lean more towards and root for?
As long as, well, with the UFC, it's all about ratings. If you can,
yeah.
If you have a big fan base, that's what they want. So, and to get a big fan base is to go through the smaller shows, and like the smaller shows are actually better than the UFC shows, and that's because these guys are putting it all on the line.
Yes.
Just to be able to have a chance to get noticed. A lot of these guys have been doing it their whole lives too. It's just they haven't got to go in the UFC yet. So I feel like I do agree with you that smaller shows are more exciting than the UFC shows. But I do feel like the UFC is going to keep going with how they do things. They've been actually changing it. Dana White, he's the UFC president. He's been actually attending smaller shows and picking out fighters. Yeah, picking out fighters that he thinks should get in the UFC. And he's been like, I forget what the show is called, but he's been bringing in guys from the smaller shows, which is awesome.
And I feel that he had done the whole organization a disservice by not doing that sooner. And I'm sorry, Des, I know, but I'm just saying that was short-sightedness on his part. I can't fault anyone else on that.
Yeah, and they've been I know they use that Ultimate Fighter to get guys in there too, and that's always fun to watch too, because those guys are, when they get in there, a lot of them. Like the smaller shows, like they put everything into it just to get that chance. So it's fun watching those. But back in the day, it wasn't as fun to watch because back in the day they wanted more ratings, so they had people that really didn't know how to fight on the show, and it was more of just a show. It wasn't about people being able to actually show what they can do. It was more people getting drunk and being stupid on TV. But I'm really glad that they cleaned that up and they switched it.
Well, cool. So, Jimmy, what would you say separates you from other fighters in your division?
Well, I'm constantly evolving. I mean, I started as a striker. I train other places. I really believe that no matter what, everybody teaches different, and you can learn so much things from like traveling. So like, I've traveled the train with the best. I think it was 2007. I was out in St. Louis training with Matt Hughes and the Hit Squad, and they had some of the best guys in the world there. Yes, I was training with. Yeah.
Now, so you trained with him?
Yep. So at the
time,
we had dorm rooms. Yeah.
Hey, quick question. Sorry, Des, I'm stepping on you again. Did he ever get his knee fixed, or is that something he just said he's going to just live with?
I'm actually not too sure on that one. I mean, it seemed fine the whole time I was there. But yeah, when we were out there, we had dorm rooms. What was it?
No, go ahead. Go ahead and finish your thought. We've got a question from another listener.
Okay. We had dorm rooms, so we had 30 guys staying there at once, and they were guys from all over the world, like the best guys. So, I mean, like, being able to train with some of the best guys in the whole world, like, and, seeing all the different types of styles and, like, just getting their input on everything has really helped me a lot. I think that's what separates me from a lot of fighters, is I'm constantly going out other places and learning. Every day I'm getting better.
And that's good. I mean, just getting out of your comfort zone and really broadening your horizons and looking for opportunities to get better and connect with the people who are better so they can help you up your game. I mean, it's just smart. It's just a smart way to do things. And it keeps you relevant, really, because you can't be expected to know everything that's going on at once, but you can connect a lot easier with people who are in all of the different areas that are up on the latest trends in those areas and can bring that home for you. So that's great. Bill wants to know if you have ever tried out for the Ultimate Fighter TV show.
I have. I've tried out twice, actually. I tried out in New Jersey. That was a long time ago, I think, like 5 years ago. I tried out for the 145-pound weight class, and at the time, Dana White wanted me to have more fights. So I went back to training, went back to trying to get more fights. And at that time, I decided to get down to 135 and try out that division. And I had a bunch of wins at 135, and then I went out to Vegas when they did the 135-pound show. It was the guys and girls together show. And I think everybody knew it at the time. You have to make weight 3 times in 6 weeks if you keep winning.
Oh.
And when I was standing in line for that for that tryout, I feel like everybody knew there's no way I was going to make 135 3 times in 6 weeks. So they even weighed me in before we got to do the tryouts, and I didn't even get I didn't even get to go on.
Oh wow!
To continue with like the tryouts, I was too big. I can make 135, but I can't do it 3 times in 6 weeks.
No, tough.
Yeah,
so do you think you're going
to
try again?
To go up it. I will.
Yeah.
If there's another one out, 145, I will go to that one. I've had a lot of teammates that have been on the Ultimate Fighter. Oh, actually, my roommate, Neil Magny, he was on the Ultimate Fighter, and he's got 14 fights in the UFC now. He's actually the one that brought me out to Denver, and I'm staying with him right now, training. So, like, I know how the Ultimate Fighter works. So I feel like something that I could do and I could win.
Okay, now, since the show's running, we don't want to go over time. There's two things that I'd like to ask. You know, I've personally met a lot of the old schoolers in the MMA, you know, Matt Hughes, Rich Franklin, Little Evil, Big Man Silva. Who would you want to be your Ultimate Fighter coach?
That's a good question. I've met pretty much everybody that I've wanted to meet, and I feel like the best coach, or I would actually want to meet, I would like Conor to be my coach, Conor McGregor.
he'd probably kill everybody that didn't win.
Yeah, everybody that I wanted to meet or were idols, I went, trained with, and met. So I have not met Conor yet, so that would be kind of cool to have him as a coach on the Ultimate Fighter. Yeah.
They'd have to have the bleep machine ready every day for that show.
Yep, I feel like it would be a good time. Before Conor, it would have been Faber. Uriah Faber.
Okay, yeah.
And I've gone out to California. I've trained with Team Alpha Male. I've already met him. I've already trained with him. So, Conor, I think. I haven't met Conor yet.
All right, well, maybe he'll get a chance to hear this interview and be like, hey, I need to check this Jimmy Zidek kid out and see what's what. That's we got to strategize. How do we get this audio in front of him? That's what we should do. Well, Caleb's right. We are running short on time. So before we run out of time, we'd like to go ahead and give you the chance to give shout-outs to anyone and everyone who's been there to support you along your journey so far.
Well, I'd like to give a shout-out to my family and friends. I have the best friends in the world and family. They come out to all my fights. Everybody actually tells me I have the best friends and family, too, everywhere I go, because when my name does get announced, there's just a different, like he said, that there's just a different atmosphere in that place. It gives a lot of people goosebumps hearing my friends and family. I'd like to give them a shout-out, and I'd like to give my sponsors a shout-out, Gizzle Cheese, Gooseberry Concrete, Raw Dog in Sheboygan, Lakeland Chiropractic, Kirby's Auto Service, Eliminate, Rev Gear, Manslayer, Athletics, and, of course, Pound for Pound.
And my
other gym back at home, HFS, Highland Fight Systems, back in Sheboygan. When I'm back in town, I get to go back there and train with all my old teammates. And I've been there from the start, from the beginning, so I'd like to give them a shout-out, too.
Very good. You just did. So one last question here before we end. And no chiming in, Kaylin. P for P protein. What is your favorite flavor?
Ice cream sandwich.
Okay. I can take ice cream sandwich. I can take ice cream sandwich. So what people... what most of our listeners probably understand by now, and what you wouldn't, is because Kaylin and I have this ongoing battle over the best P for P protein flavor. And so I was just interested in what you would say. And ice cream sandwich, while it wasn't chocolate, it was still a good pick. And actually, our little what do I want to call it here? It's not really, we'll call it a competition. It's about to enter a next level, so everybody's just going to have to stay tuned to see what that shapes up to be. But anyway, Jimmy, thanks so much for being on the show. I've learned so much. You know, I've never really had much of an interest of watching MMA fights, but for boxing, anything along those lines for that matter. But now I feel like I could sit and watch a match and have an understanding of what's going on and maybe even appreciate it when I wasn't, like, covering my eyes because of what's going on in the ring. So I appreciate you taking the time and sharing with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So do you have another fight scheduled? I mean, you're training in Colorado, and I know you hope to have another fight soon, but do you have a kind of an idea of when you might step in the ring again?
Hoping right away. I was cut 2 weeks ago, and I'm gonna get the stitches out probably tomorrow, and I feel like I can fight again right away. It's looking right now maybe April 8th, and that could be in Madison, Wisconsin. Otherwise, it'll be somewhere maybe in Denver. But right now, I'm hoping for April 8th in Madison.
Very cool. Well, we wish you the absolute best.
Thank you.
So there we go. Real quick, you got about 30 seconds for a snickerdoodle shout-out, Kaylin.
Snickerdoodle shout-out.
Hey, on behalf of Kaylin, myself, and the boys at PPP Muscle, your body is a temple, so let's build it.
Build it with snickerdoodles.